The Pro Tools Expert Podcast with James Ivey, Julian Rogers, and Dan Cooper.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Pro Tools Expert Podcast number 328. It is the 16th of July 2018. My name's James Ivey.
I'm Julian Rogers.
And I'm Dan Cooper.
And Dan, I pretty much know what the weather's doing where you are because you are mere miles down the road from me. Julian, are you still bathing in a gorgeous summer's evening?
We're still very much like you are in the southeast. So yeah. Absolutely.
I think you're baking cooking. In an oven though, aren't you?
Seconds before we started the record, I just closed the window and now I'm going to slowly get more and more tetchy as the record goes on as I head
Yeah,
up.
I think we've all turned the aircon off to give you an easier podcast edit. So,
yeah, your find of the week's going to be crack fresh air.
Let's crack on with this here podcasty thing. Deals, Julian.
Our friends at Audio Deluxe have an exclusive deal offering 30% off Retune from Zedplane. Retune takes an interesting approach to tuning in that, as well as being a plugin capable of typical pitch correction and pitch quantize duties, it offers a retuning matrix, allowing pitch-based experiments through mapping incoming pitches to different pitches on the output side. There's that, and don't forget to check out the rest of the deals from our partners on our deals page.
I like the sound of that. That sounds very interesting. Definitely one for to be given the jivey workout, I think. Let's move on to talking points, and these are sponsored by our friends at Universal Audio. Over to you, Fab.
Good morning, children. This is Fab DuPont. The Pro Tools Expert Podcast talking points are brought to you with the support of Universal Audio.
Do your vocal recordings need more shine? Are you in the market for a new audio interface? Well, if the answer to those questions is yes, now could be a good time to buy a Universal Audio Apollo Twin as part of UA's Apollo Twin Platinum Vocal Promotion. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Solo and get Antares Auto-Tune real-time free. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Duo or USB and get Antares Auto-Tune and the Manly Box Box plugins free. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Quads and get Antares Auto-Tune, Manly Voxbox and Pure Plate Reverb plugins all for free. And breathe. You can find out more about this and other deals the Universal team are running by visiting uaudio.com or by clicking the link in the podcast notes.
Right, so time for a punch-up. We hear out there in podcast land that you lot like us getting a bit controversial with our topics for talking points. Rather than just wading through the same old, I agree too. So we've dug deep through the archive for interesting stuff to talk about. So here we go. Talking point number one, is parallel compression a get-out-of-jail-free card for those who don't know how to use a compressor?
Oh, me.
Do you know that bit at the beginning of the Shrek DVD where Donkey's jumping up and down and go, pick me? Julian, let's start with you, buddy.
I think this might have been inspired by me having a general grumble about all sorts of things, one of which was students, and I'm talking specifically about some students, quite a few students actually that I've met in the past, who when introduce, and we're talking people who are being introduced to stuff, not people who are experienced, to compression, immediately talk about sidechain and parallel compression and entirely skip using a full band compressor on the entire signal like a compressor is designed to be used, if you see what I mean. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with doing these other things, but they're those things that kind of really lend themselves to the trick, the reveal, the exciting blog post, the video that you want to click on, whereas using a compressor for what it was designed to do is kind of maybe slightly less exciting, you know? In the same way as the amount of people that I've met in similar environments who talk about MS recording, but have never just mic'd something up XY, for example, because there's the magic, there's the reveal, you know? There is a downside to parallel compression. Great, absolutely, used appropriately for the right thing, for what it's good for. But the thing that I've seen so many times is people who don't know how to use a compressor setting up wild over compression and then just dialing it all back by mixing it in parallel. And it just makes me go, what was the point of that? This is no compression compression. And not in a good way. It's like, I've made a right mess of that, but listen, it sounds acceptable now because I've dialed it all out, and basically it's just bringing up the low-level stuff and making stuff a little bit thicker and bringing the noise floor up. And that's pointless. Anyone else?
Yeah, the good old mix. Yeah, the good old mix parallel control on plugins. It's quite a trendy thing, really. I think every plugin now, every new plugin has some sort of mix blend control on them. And it's sort of started with compressor plugins not that long ago, but a while ago at the same time. And yeah, there's a million videos out there that show top mix engineers or all sorts of mix engineers going, right, parallel compression on drums, put it on the room and smash the crap out of it and then put it all back again. Okay. So we make something sound twice as worse and then make it sound half better. So what was the point?
Well, walk me through that. Half as worse and twice better.
twice as worse. You make something sound twice as worse and maybe a little bit better. It's the whole point of this argument. People use compression. Don't know how to use a compressor. Smack it into parallel compression and you can't really hear what you're doing anyway with parallel compression. It's just something that adds a little bit of density. But the trick is, if you know how to use attack and release times, you probably won't even need to muck about with parallel compression because you'll use it so sparingly and it'll work better. James, you're quiet.
I am, because I instantly want to go off topic, which is very dangerous, I know, because my compression revelation, and I'm going to hold my hands up and say I've probably only sussed compression in the last, as in not just what, how to make it sound good, but how to actually match what I want to achieve with the right type of compressor and or plug-in compressor to actually to the input signal. And do you know how I learnt compression?
How did you learn compression, James?
Hardware is how to learn how to do compression and how it works. Yeah. Because you're, I don't know, when I first started...
It's your hands and your ears,
when
isn't
I first
it?
Started that. Learning compression with plugins, because I didn't have, I don't have an army of compressors now. I've got a few select pieces. But when I first started to think, oh, yeah, I can do this compression thing, I was doing it with plugins. And unfortunately, in plugin format, if you don't do the first stage of things correctly, you can twist all knobs and buttons and levers you like. Nothing else is going to happen. Whereas to me, in hardware, the more things you tweak, the more you break it, the more you make it sound bad, the more you're learning what that compressor is doing. I don't know why I think that. Maybe there's some kind of psycho-acoustic, psycho-musical, psycho babble something, to quote an Alan Parsons Project track, in there. But I think the way to learn compression is hardware. Get yourself a 500 series compressor. I've been playing with the BAE 500C this week. Very, very nice. Get yourself some 500 series gear and learn compression on hardware. That's the way I did it. I'm not saying it's going to work for everyone, but hey, it worked for me. And now I can genuinely say, when I'm putting compression on something, I'm doing it because I either want the controlling effect of a compressor, and let's face it, that's why they all did it first. That's why things like the Fairchild were invented, as a controlling limiter. And let's bundle limiters and compressors in here at the same time, because let's face it, they both have the same controlling effect. They go at it different ways, but they still have the same effect. They are a level, they're a dynamics control. I think start with hardware and you will learn properly what's going on. Now, there is a tutorial coming from me this week all about compression and ways of using it and stuff like that. And there's some there's some kind of off-the-wall ideas about how to use a compressor and how to achieve very specific effects. But once you know how to use compression, then let's start dabbling with parallel compression. Now, I don't mean by that, sorry, Dan, you said I was quiet. That's your fault. I don't mean reaching for the mix knob on a plugin that has a mix knob on it. Yes, we all know that is parallel compression. Learn how to set up a parallel compression chain in Pro Tools using auxiliaries, using key inputs, using all that sort of stuff. Learn how they work before you start going, oh, I can just reach for the mix knob and dial it back. Learn the fundamentals, learn the basics, then start playing with the stuff that's got all this stuff built in. Dan and I had a revelation at NAMM this year, the Andrew Shep's, I can't what it's called,
The Omni
Channel. It's amazing.
It's lovely, that.
But it does rely very heavily on Andrew's incredible knowledge of parallel compression. If you want to learn parallel compression, I would suggest you start with Andrew Shep's, because let's face it, he's probably written the book or three on it. And relax.
I'm with you on the hardware thing, to get used to sort of hearing the effects of compression and getting it dialed in correctly. Because you can use two hands. You can't do that with a plugin. So you can lower the threshold and at the same time bring up the output. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
So you're engaged in the hardware. So you are focusing on like listening as opposed to moving one dial at a time. Like, okay, I'm just going to move the attack. Okay, that funny little graph now is doing something. So I'm seeing something, but
that funny little graph is doing
it.
Something, but I can't hear the difference.
I can't
exactly.
hear it. Yeah, it's that thing. So if you're using two hands on hardware, lowering the threshold and bringing up the makeup gain, you're really in the zone. You're in the sweet spot to actually hear what's going on and bypass and all that. And for me, I like to overcompress to help me get the release and attack times right. So it sort of feels in time or rhythmical. I want to use that word, rhythmical. So let's say it's, I don't know, an acoustic guitar that's quite jangly. I want to try and get that attack and release to make it sound...
I want it in the tempo of the track,
rhythmical.
Almost.
Well, I find it tricky to get bang on, but just something that sounds
something close.
Very flattering. Yeah, flattering. But if you overcompress it, you can hear it more by lowering the threshold. And when you do get the attack and release right, by using your ears and not looking at the little blob on a plugin, you can then bring the threshold back up. And then you can choose how much squish you need.
Plugin GUIs are overly pretty and overly guilty for us going, let's just compress it or let's smash it and we can always...
No, because you're looking at gain reduction meters and that you shouldn't look at gain reduction meters. You should be judging the compression by your ears and going, that sounds nice. It's not interfering too much or it is interfering too much. It's too much squish, but that's what I wanted. You know, you've got to know what you want first.
The funny thing is, one of my favourite hardware compressors, stroke limiters, is the Neve 33609. Now, in plugin format, the UAD plugin version, I found really difficult to get to have the sound that I wanted from using the hardware. Once I really got to know the hardware from having one for a couple of 3 months, I went back to the plugin and went, oh, it is really good. It is really close to the real thing because I knew how to use it to get its sound. Does that make sense? I knew what to dial in, where to start, and how to get the sound that I liked out of that compressor. And then using the plugin was a dream.
Yeah, and I was the same when I got the Tegeler Creme. You know, how many sort of bus compressor plugins have I got on my system? Many, loads from Waves and all the others. And it's, you know, you think, is that compressing anything? Isn't it, you know, bypassing your thinking, you're second guessing yourself. And yeah, that's why I bought that Creme. I didn't want to give it up. As soon as it came in for a review, I went, that's staying there because click, 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 I can hear what that does. And it's subtle and it's transparent and it's doing something. I can hear that and I can hear it and I can feel the effects by just click, click, done. Can't do that with a plug-in. That's worth every penny.
The funny thing is, talking about bus compressors as we kind of nearly were. See, I told you I was good at getting off topic. In one of my other parts of my day job, I was producing a video of the Dramastic Audio Obsidian, which, let's face it, is an SSL-style bus compressor. It's a generic term now. That does exist. Now, my console has got an SSL-style bus compressor in it, but this one sounded different. This particular hardware unit, this 1U rack, sounded incredible. I couldn't make it sound bad. I couldn't make it sound over-compressed, even on a full mix. And that, to me, is when I went, right, I need to have that. How much? Yeah, that was one of those moments. Those moments don't happen very often around here, but that was definitely a sharp intake of breath. I think she'd kill
me. Julian, parallel compression then. Let's get back on topic. pick an application that you've used.
I'm going to pick up on, because I was very quiet while James was talking, but I'm going to pick up on what you're saying about learning compression using hardware. I'm going to go slightly further, because the very worst way to learn compression is by getting a DAW, some software, and then getting some source material that is probably already overcompressed and trying to figure this stuff out. And I know plenty of people who've tried to figure that stuff out, and they end up horribly confused and thinking this thing doesn't do anything. And it's going, well, it's not going to do anything on that. But the way to learn compression, and the way that I've always done it, actually, I've always introduced this stuff by starting with gates and expanders, because that's a really good way to introduce threshold and attack and release. Because especially with a gate, it's like, you know, with kind of, you know, possibly less aggressive compressor settings, it's like, oh, can you hear that? People aren't young people that I've spent more time with. I seem to be spending a lot of time with my kind of, like, you know, former lecturer head on in this. But, you know, it's relevant. I don't think that we generally, and particularly the younger you are, the less you've been exposed to this, hear dynamics very well. Because in terms of kind of, like, you know, produced non-live music and non-acoustic music, we're not exposed to dynamics nearly as much as, you know, we might be. So this is a pet theory that I have. But if you're using just a gate and it's like, can you hear this working? And it's going, stop, go, stop, go. It's like, yeah, come on, you can hear that. Here's what these controls do. Now doing something else where instead of just stopping the sound, it's just turning it down a little bit. Here we go. The best place to learn compression isn't on a computer with some drums. It's through a PA system with vocals.
Damn right.
Because, no, this is the thing, just because there you're addressing a problem. It's housekeeping stuff. Because if somebody leans into a mic or pops onto it or just kind of like gives it a little bit too much, it gets much louder. And that's like, oh, that's not good. And it goes above that threshold of comfort or of appropriateness. And you need a tool to deal with that. And hello, somebody made that. Here it is. It's a compressor. So, you know, drama in a rack, something like that. Two hands, two controls, all that kind of stuff. Something else I'm going to say is that the very worst compressor to make a software emulation of, if we're talking about operating it using a mouse, is an 1176.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
It's just like, how is that ever going to work? Because, I mean, I've quite inappropriately referred to the 1176 nipple tweak. You know what I mean? That kind of like two hands counter in opposite directions at the same time.
One goes up, one goes down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you can't do that, it doesn't work.
The whole point of an 1176 is to be able to do that, really.
Exactly. So,
the waves one makes me laugh because you can link control. So you shift click on one control and shift click on another, meaning you can, when you turn one control up, you'd think the other one would turn down, vice versa. They both go in the same direction.
You're joking.
You think, come on, it's just a fix
no
that.
Way.
That would be brilliant.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, honest.
I was not expecting that. Okay, so but back onto the parallel thing. Okay, so here we are. I've tried to figure this out because, I mean, okay, we can do easy parallel, which is just kind of like, you know, if you've got a recording that's got some ambience on it, you can turn the room up, do that thing. I've seen so many people try to do this on drum recordings that were made in small, dry rooms. It's not going to work. I did a tutorial about this using the Sonox compressor. And it was a really nice example just because it was specifically captured in a larger room. So there was a genuinely far-field ambient microphone up that was far enough away to be uncorrelated. It was genuinely ambient. And because of that, you could do great things with it. You could make it suck and squeeze and bang and blow and all the rest of it. And great. Suck, squeeze, bang, blow. That's a four-stroke engine. That's not compression. Mind you, that features compression.
There is compression in there.
We need to move that one along. Anyway, well, but the thing with parallel that is that if you've got something desirable, low level information that you want to bring up, fantastic, really good. What else is down there? Just because if you've just got, for example, I don't know, an acoustic guitar recording made in a less than perfectly quiet room, then you're probably bringing up a load of stuff that you don't necessarily want and some room noise with it. And you know, I mean, you know, possibly even some noise. So you know what I mean? It's kind of, it's not necessarily the thing that you want to be doing. The thing that I've been trying to kind of get my head around really is just kind of like, there's definitely an overlap between parallel compression and upward expansion. And quite a while ago, I've kind of sort of gone, well, it's the same thing, isn't it? It just turns up the quiet stuff. But no, parallel compression is more complicated than that. And it's something, it's an itch that I'm still scratching in terms of trying to really get my head around it. And when I think I understand it well enough to be able to kind of like, you know, elucidate on that, then I might have to make some content. But at the moment, somebody who knows more than me will go, no, you've got that totally wrong. And I'll probably be wrong on that. So, you know, watch this space. But in terms of parallel compression, using it on an appropriate source to just bring up and get a little kind of dog leg into your transfer curve, if you know what I mean, because it's all about overshoot. It's about what happens above the threshold as well, because we're summing the compressed over the threshold part of the compression path with an uncompressed one. And the way the two sum, as long as they sum properly, which in software world they absolutely should do these days, is going to get kind of quite interesting. Especially when you've got a dynamic process that involves attack and release times. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there, which is probably why it's so interesting to people, particularly because that's going to change depending on what compressors you put where. So, yeah, the Andrew Shep's way of working.
The parallel bit, I've seen this in quite a few EQ plugins as well, and I do think, really? Really?
I wrote something on that recently. I made a video, and it was an interesting one, parallel EQ. Just because there is an issue here if you're working that way. I mean, James, you're working with a console. You must be getting this. But if you're doing these parallel chains, it's additive. So it gets louder when you start using it. And it's very difficult to level match in any way that isn't really laborious, especially if you're working out of the box. And I think things can start to feel lots better when you're mixing. Go, yeah, I'm going to wind in some parallel EQ. And what you're doing, actually, is you're making it louder, which, as we all know, feels great, you know. But yeah, it's not necessarily...
Land is better, right?
Land is better. Of course it is.
Said the drummer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the interesting thing for me is... I was chatting with a fellow high-tech music blogging type person this week, and we are also both alumni of Mix with the Masters, and we were talking about other Mix with the Masters people we would like to courses we'd like to go on, and from Andrew Shep's is right up there because of his absolute thing with parallel compression, parallel EQ. He is the master, in my opinion. Is it worth the £4,000 or whatever it would be for me to go and do it? I'd love to say yes. I just think there's better ways for me to spend my money, and that's probably on using the gear I've got better to make some more money before I do fork out to learn parallel. Yes, it's very handy. Yes, it's clearly a very useful tool. And it's one that I think will...
It's a technique.
Yeah, it's a technique.
I think it's a technique more than anything.
And I think it's one we should probably...
get mixed up with it.
It's one we will probably all continue to explore a little bit. And say, once Julian has got his little grey cells around it, I'm sure he'll produce some lecturer-level content. Because the one thing about your stuff, Julian, is you have a very brilliant knack of being able to break very difficult and so often complex topics down into stuff even drummers can understand.
Well, thank you very much.
That's stands up. Small round of applause.
Really? Can you do my taxes next year? That'd be really helpful. Thank you, Julian.
That'd be great.
So let's park that one for now. And
well, no, let's park it. But first of all, if anyone is listening to this and actually is shouting at us because they disagree, do comment in the show notes or on Facebook and tell us how you use parallel compression. We'd like to know your techniques and your workflows.
Yeah, I don't think any of us have said it's a bad idea.
Nope.
But I think
just
all
that
of
we
us
don't
have,
do it.
Well, no, we don't do it by default, probably.
Yes.
Yes.
just because I've certainly used it, and I'm more open to parallel processing recently than I have been ever, really. And it's probably down to people like I did a piece recently about Andrew Sheps and Vance Powell and people, and kind of seeing how they're using it and kind of going, yeah, there is something in this. Absolutely, and seeing it being used in an effective way that really adds something, but sparingly and not exclusively as well. And I think that was our starting point, wasn't it?
Seeing and hearing. Right, let's park this one, as we said. Competitions, back with you, Julian.
To help celebrate their shiny new website and the release of 6 new music production and post-production bundles, our friends at Nugent Audio are offering you the chance to win either a Nugent producer bundle worth $499 or a Nugent post bundle worth $899. Choose which prize you'd like to win and enter the competition. Links in the show notes.
Okay, talking point number 2. We posted a roundup article, or as they're known in the trade, a listicle, just the other day, featuring all our reverb plugins we've reviewed over the years. So what we thought we'd do is talk about reverb. Verb. That's delay, isn't it? How we use them in our workflows, which ones we like, which ones we don't, do's and don'ts, all that sort of stuff. So I'm going to start with you, Dan.
Lovely. Reverbs. Probably the most important effect in my workflow, and I'm sure it is of many others out there. But it's bloody difficult to use sometimes. It's really hard to get your head around as well when you first start out mixing, because it's just too easy to whack up whole, make it sound massive and go, wow, sound like George Michael. But that's not really, best way of using reverb. I find using reverb in a really subtle way to be better for the music and whatever I'm using it on. My go-to is Nimbus, Exponential Audio Nimbus. That thing is absolutely brilliant. And I use the really short little studio room presets as starting points. They just do something really magic where you can just about hear they're doing something, but you're kidding yourself. But when you mute, you bypass those reverbs, you know, your mix has just lost all its body.
Dan, so do you have R4?
Yes. No.
I was going to ask, do you not have R4? If not, why would Nimbus have R4? But you haven't got it, so that explains it.
I haven't got it. No, Nimbus is absolutely brilliant.
Nimbus and R4 are very different, though. Let's not pretend that one is building on the other. They are quite different.
Does anyone else make reverbs apart from Exponential Audio? Come on, what else do you use? No, I don't want to steer it away, but it's just kind of like, we know Exponential.
We know. Okay, on. Air Spring.
Ooh, really?
I absolutely love that. That is a really, really pucker little, you know, throw it on, get the tone and the size right.
Good one.
And,
okay, so yeah, Springs.
I love
Springs.
That.
Okay.
Spring reverbs.
Now,
yes.
Here we go.
Spring, great on vocals.
Here we go with Springs. Yeah. Basically, I used to hate spring reverb. For years, I used to just slag off guitarists with their
boing.
Nasty, springy
drop the amp.
All of that. And it's, I think what it was really that put me off spring reverb was guitarists using way too much of it. And that's
it's one of the settings on a Marshall amp that should not be turned up all the way.
It's not great, but Spring Reverb, James, where do you use Spring Reverb? And if so, where do you get it from?
I've got a tank. I've got a real one.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a reverb tank out of a 19... it's a reissue. It's a 1980s reissue Fender Twin.
Okay.
And it sounds amazing. And I run it through... the 500 series, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called the Tank by Radial, and I use that. So it's the hardware version. It sounds amazing. And if you do want to do crazy reverb effects, you just reach over and tap the thing, and it does some crazy noises. of course, it's a pair of springs because they all are, but it is just the one sound. You can't change it. You can't, short of actually going in there and changing the
like a real spring reverb. Yeah,
exactly. You just dial in the amount of it you want. Either it sounds right or it doesn't. This particular one sounds amazing. I've used the AKG one that's now by Universal Audio, and it sounds great.
Yeah,
I have also used the hardware version of that when I was in France on Mixed with the Masters. Ping, second time in one podcast.
Yeah, third time you're out.
To be honest, for me, only ever gets used on guitars or snare drums.
Okay, cool.
Vocals. Oh, God, try it on vocals.
Okay, I will.
I've been doing this for a long time. I find spring reverbs really sit quite nicely on my wife's vocal and a few of my clients as well. It doesn't get in the way of other things because it's more for me like a tone than it is a space.
Can we have a massive rewind a second? What is the right reverb? How do you know? How do you know when you've got the right one?
Well, there isn't a right. I'm not going to say there is a right one. There's the one that you like at the moment, the one you decide to stop on.
Because there is, say, in, I don't believe I'm putting words in his mouth, but Russ and I have definitely said, pretty much anything by that man at Exponential Audio. Sorry, we mentioned him again. Whack that on. That's a great place to start. I guarantee you won't change it unless you actually find yourself in a place where you go, nah, do you know what? It's not the right reverb. I could just go for any of the presets in any of Michael's stuff and go, that'll be great. That'll be absolutely fine. And stick with it.
It's got to sound right in the context of the mix. Do you know what I mean? So if you've got a really dry sounding song and you go, this is the sort of song that's going to be everything up front and in your face, really snappy, then you throw a reverb on it and all of a sudden it just washes things out. And you go, well, you can muck about with reverbs, but then you've got to make a choice. Does this song actually need anything on, let's say, the vocal or the snare drum? Yes or no? And if it's no, this doesn't need anything, move on to something else. Or yes, dig into more reverbs and try and find not so much like big spaces, but small spaces. Or like I said, like I look for with spring reverbs, kind of more of a texture, a tone to support the instrument or the vocal. Stuff that doesn't really get in the way too much. I mean, you've got a Procaster, haven't you, James?
I have a hardware Procaster, and it's beautiful. Hmm. Now ask me how many of the presets I use.
Go on.
I use about two of them. I really do. Because the way I like my drums to sound in my room, the studio plate effect sounds absolutely awesome. If I want something bigger, I go onto the room, one of the bigger halls. I don't think I've tweaked them. They are.
I can't see anything wrong with that at all.
Presets. They sound great.
If you think it's a room simulator, and if you had a couple of rooms that you like the sound of, you'd use them over and over again. That's appropriate.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's one. It's kind of like with reverbs. I love reverb just because it's I kind of came back to being really quite excited about reverb not that long ago. And it kind of reminded me of when I first got my hands on digital reverb, just because digital reverb, you know, kind of like in the 80s was not achievable by mortal people, you know. I mean, it was just kind of like you had to have some money to access that.
Or friends in low places. Yeah.
Exactly. But I can remember the first digital reverb that I really spent some time with, and it was an original quadriverb.
Yeah.
And I can just remember like large plate one on a load of sort of Roland analog synths and just going, wow. And I'm sure I've got some recordings from that time and stuff that I'd done before in my four track days with a delay pedal, trying to kind of get a sort of reverby effect out of a delay pedal. Doesn't work. You can't do it, but I still tried. Endlessly. And those first recordings were just from they were from the other end of a railway tunnel. It was just like so much reverb all over them. It was hilarious. But we all experience that. There's no point fighting it. You get hold of something you haven't had before, and yeah, you've got to overdo it, and you need to do that so that you kind of like top out on it and you can then pull back. But there are some reverbs that I have that I overlook. What are yours?
How long we
adaptive
got?
Verb. Adaptive Verb by Zanaptic. I absolutely love that thing as well.
That's a kind of funny one, isn't it? What does that do again? Because that does something quite interesting.
The only way I can really describe it is it's like a synth reverb. It's try and explain any Zanaptic plugin without having to explain what a flux capacitor is. It's difficult. It's the tool. I do reach for it, and it either works brilliantly, or it really is just that was a silly idea to put that on. it just makes instruments sound as though they are, more synth-like. It's a very cool kind of creative effects as it is reverb. You've got to try it and then see if you can try and explain it. I'll buy anyone a pint if they can.
Sure.
Yes, I do overlook it, but I do try to incorporate it when I feel the time is right. Julian, what is your overlooked reverb of choice?
I'm going to go with two. One, because it's just kind of like...
What, stereo?
Yeah. The Sonox reverb is brilliant. And it's so... I had it for ages and I just never really used it. And everything you want to do is in there. And the thing I always look out for in a reverb is does it do nice sounding small rooms, because that's hard. I think it's a familiarity thing. We know what small rooms sound like because we spend all our time in them. Whereas, you know, large cathedral, small cathedral, that always sticks out again. What's one of them then? Isn't that a church? But anyway, these kind of things, you know, they're so striking and we don't spend all of our time in them, or at least I certainly don't. So because of that, you know, it's kind of like they don't get the same level of scrutiny from me. But if you're talking kind of like, you know, living room, you're going, yeah, that sounds right, or it doesn't. The Sonox one, fantastic. But if you're talking character stuff, because I'm going to have two because I want to, the UAD AMS one.
It's very, very cool.
It's amazing just because it's not a piece of hardware that I know. I've never seen one in the flesh. But you just run stuff through it and you just pop through the presets. I have no issue with reverb presets. Absolutely. I'm very sniffy about them on other applications, but reverb's fine. Why not? And there's just these sounds that you just know. It's just the 80s in a box, you know. It's amazing. So, yeah, they're the two that I'd go for, the Sonox one and the, what's it called, RMX? There's a 16 in it, and I can't think of the name.
RMX16, isn't it?
RMX16? Yeah. Is it an X? Okay. That one, anyway. Brilliant for kind of those kind of like weird sort of like 80s snare drums or Depeche Mode vocals or these kinds of things, you know. We know those sounds and they're all in there. So, Dan, we haven't... No, we've done Dan.
I know, I've done mine.
The reverb that I used to put on everything, I haven't used in a little while, and it's the Softube Sarverb.
That's nice, yeah. Actually.
It's really, really nice. Yeah. I used to, once again, I'll quote him on it. Russ and I used to plaster this on everything. Great reverb. And there's a kind of cut down version of it, less tweakable, inside Complete. And I can't remember the name of it, but it's a very similar sounding reverb, but it's not the same. And that's another one that should, if you're a Complete owner, the Native Instruments Complete package, you should be checking out the reverb that's by Softube in it. It's awesome. Just for the wave, is it called a waterfall diagram, where it all kind of falls off?
Yeah.
Oh, the GUI is very pretty, but it sounds great as well. But to be honest, I'm not using... Okay, it's going to sound ironic. I'm not using that much software reverb. Reverb plugins. Let me change that, because I am using software.
But aren't you using the control plugin for the
Procasti? At the moment, I'm not, because my reverb, my MIDI.
You never change anything anyway. You don't need to,
James. James, who developed that plugin?
Michael Carnes.
Three strikes, you're out.
Okay. I can't use it at the moment because the Procasti, as beautiful as it is. It is a bit aged, and it doesn't have a USB interface on it. It only has MIDI, and my MIDI interface actually went for a Burton recently. So I need to get another one, basically. My old M-Audio, no, it wasn't even M-Audio. What were they called before that? They were called...
MIDI Man?
MIDI Man, yes. Mm. My MIDI Man 2-in-4-out died.
Fantastic.
Which I think is... the first piece of MIDI Man gear I've ever had.
But thinking about, we know how you're using this thing. So basically, it's which of the two presets was I using on this track, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, yeah, you probably don't need it then, do you?
I mean, I've got it. I will set it up again. And I did have it set up. But all it made me do was tweak. And I just think, no, I liked those sounds. To be honest, I've got again, it sounds ridiculous. I use 6 reverb effect style plugins. That's it. And I use them hardware across the console. And for any of you who haven't seen that video, you should check it out because I'm using the M7, of course, in hardware. I'm using an old Alesis Wedge from the 90s, which is why when you said about the Quadriverb and things like that, the Quadriverb GT, the Wedge was one of the last Alesis Reverb products to be actually developed. And they took all the best bits of all of their previous stuff, whacked it in this box, which nobody bought, except me, as it turned out. And then everything else I've got is the UAD emulations of EMT-140, EMT-250, Lexicon 224, and the, I would love to have this space, but there's only one of them, the Ocean Way room emulation plugin, which sounds absolutely amazing. And I use them hardware across the console. Very, very rarely does anything else, do I need anything else?
So in that case, really, if we're going kind of full circle on that, is I'm surprised that more studios haven't received the plug-in treatment like Ocean Way did. So go on then. Which should happen next?
Air, Lyndhurst Hall.
Air, yeah.
It's beautiful.
Without the building works going on in the background.
It's all been halted.
There we go.
It's all been halted, so that's all safe. Air, Lyndhurst. I'd love to say Capital.
Stone Room at Townhouse.
there's a big issue with that.
There is actually, yes,
the fact that it's long knocked down.
The one that's going to do the sales has got to be Studio 2.
Well, that goes to say.
I didn't even say which studio. So
no,
that,
you didn't.
That
you didn't have to because it was the next one on Dan and Mai's list.
Yes.
the daft thing is actually I don't think it's okay. Here we go. I don't think it's an absolutely fabulous sounding room.
It's just
a room that everyone knows the sound of.
Just put some tea towels over the toms and get on with it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, reverb is one of those things. I mean, say, as we've already discussed, I know what I like, I've got it, and I dial it in. If I need to change any of the presets on the 224... Actually, the one that gets the most tweaking is, believe it or not, the Alesis Wedge, because I use it as an effects box rather than as just the dedicated reverb, because it's not the sweetest sounding reverb ever. It's got a kind of grungy graininess to it that I really like on some things. So I'll get in there and just get a bit dirty with the sliders and mess around with it. Whereas the other stuff, don't mess with Ocean Way. It already sounds fabulous. People who say to me, wow, your drums sound really big. I said, yeah, I recorded them in a really big room. And anyone who's in my drum room will know that's not it. The 140 and the 250 get different size plates because they sound amazing. The 224 gets a little bit of tweaking every so often if I want something specific. But most of my drum sound comes from the M7 and Ocean Way. And there's nothing wrong with that because, hey, I don't think there is. Let us move on to some feedback from the community.
Bastian DeWard, first some positive vibes. You guys are fabulous. Dear Pro Tools
That'll
experts.
Do. Stop.
Dear Pro Tools experts, I'm a Dutch DJ, composer and producer, born in 1983. Back in the late 80s, at the age of 6, I started composing on the Commodore. All right, 6? No way. I started composing on a Commodore Amiga computer with custom-designed MIDI hardware. I have a rare collection of vintage synthesizers and gear. I produce various electronic music genres under different artist names. Besides my own productions, I regularly work as a ghost producer, mix and mastering engineer for other artists through my own production company. We're not going to plug your company, are we? He said such nice things about us.
Yeah.
TMRRW Media. There we are. I have a part-time career in IT as a web developer and network admin. I've been using Pro Tools mixing software since 2008. It's really the heart of my studio, together with the C24. I kind of want to ask if you guys have some free Pro Tools marketing gadgets that I could use in my studio. For example, a mouse pad. That would be great. So do we do merch?
We did once. We did some T-shirts and nobody bought them. I think the only person who bought them, I think, was me. I'm going to have a look for some old Avid stuff that I'm going to send. So, Bastin, if you want to ping me an email with your address, I'll see what I can dig out. Because, quite frankly, I certainly probably shouldn't have any more, but I still have a fairly good collection of pens, mouse pads, all the normal throwaway stuff from trade shows from a selection of manufacturers that I can probably let you have. So ping us an email with your address and I'll have a dig through the loft of doom, or as it used to be known, Avid South London stores.
I would to be honest, James, the last lot of merch that was made was about 2 years ago. Do you remember when we rebranded the site, the new logo?
Yeah.
Do you remember? We got some t-shirts.
Oh, actually, do you know what? I don't know if I have. They might have been used for decorating.
I was going to say, you can have mine, but it's covered in paint.
I'll see if I can find one and say, ping us your snail mail address and I will get one of those off to you. As long as you're a medium. Okay, thanks for that one. It's time to move on to some questions from the community, and these are sponsored by our friends at RSPE Audio.
The Pro Tools Expert Community Feedback is brought to you with the kind support of RSPE Audio Solutions. Great people and great prices.
RSPE Audio is proud to announce the new ASC Nano Attack Wall. It's a mini version of the ASC Attack Wall that takes all of the acoustic benefits of its bigger brother and shrinks them down to fit on your desktop. Get reliable, repeatable, and accurate sonic space that's extremely portable, so you can take it with you when you move or work in other studios. Learn more at RSPE website with the link in the show notes.
Garrett Miller's been in touch. Hey, I enjoyed the review of the Slate ML2s that James did. I've got one and we'll be buying a few more, but I'm trying to figure out what the best workflow is with the ML2s and Apollo and Pro Tools. Please don't say just turn off low latency monitoring and monitor through Pro Tools. At low buffer, it doesn't work well. I get comb filtering and I also don't want to work at 96K.
Okay, pause that. I will come back and address that shortly. Carry on.
Currently, I'm monitoring through the console with EQ and compression, channel inserts set to monitor, not record, to make the mic sound better on the way in, and then just using the VMR in Pro Tools on playback to get the sound I really want. Playback with a VMR sounds a little different, better, than the live tracking, but it's fine. Ideally, Universal Audio would create some sort of wrapper plugin, similar to Blue Cat Patchworks, that would allow the VMR to run in console so you could actually monitor the different mics while you record. Do you have any suggestions? He gives his system details. Let's not read that out. Basically, he's got some gear and it looks perfectly adequate. So, James.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think?
Right. First thing, when he says he's not monitoring through Pro Tools, he's monitoring through console, that's fine. This comb filtering thing is what bothers me, and this is what bothers me about all software consoles that run alongside their hardware. Unless you mute Pro Tools or you mute the console, you're going to have comb filtering stroke phasing. Fact. End of. Good night, Vienna. That is why you're getting this comb filtering. If you want to monitor using the Slate VMR using the ML2 VMS system, the virtual microphones, do it. Mute all your inputs in console, monitor through Pro Tools. It doesn't look like yours is a slow machine. You've got plenty of RAM, plenty of juice. I think it's a red herring that you're running three monitors. I don't think that's an issue. 128 sample buffer size or 256 should be adequate. VMS is not thirsty when running inside VMR. I probably wouldn't be using compression plugins because they are the thirsty ones in my experience in the VMR system. But the comb filtering phasing thing you're getting is because you're monitoring two sources at the same time. Inside console, your virtual return channels are turned up. If you want to not hear the comb filtering, either mute all the channels in Pro Tools that are your inputs, or mute those returns. Now, of course, you won't get any click if you mute the returns, so the best way to do it is either ignore console or ignore Pro Tools. If you want to monitor through the virtual mix rack, mute everything in console and monitor through Pro Tools. That will fix it.
Toby Frisk, hello Pro Tools expert. I have followed your podcast for some years and I'm thankful to you for all the time and effort you give so that I and many others can enjoy an educating, entertaining and sometimes challenging podcast.
Challenging?
Okay. Never. Challenging? Thank you, guys. I wonder how to set up more than one computer. Mac, in my case, in a Pro Tools setup to use an older computer to spave, for instance, a heavy sampling library. And can this be done for other things such as processing tech? Best regards. I've got an idea. So, I'm pretty sure you're going to say it, James.
I think you want to say the same as me. The way to do this, the best way to do this, and the most reliable way to do this, is to link your two machines together via Ethernet and use the amazing Vienna Ensemble Pro.
That's it.
It just works.
We've got plenty of content on. We've got content on this. So if you type Vienna Ensemble Pro into ProToolsExpert.com, you will find a fair few posts and videos
now,
on this.
It has to be said the VEP is designed for sample libraries and for virtual instrument libraries, should I say, rather than actual sample libraries. But, you know, the process, it works. It just does work. It's brilliant. I used it for years when I had an older Mac Pro hooked up to my old Mac Pro cheese grater. And it just lightened the load on the more recent machine a vast amount. Because actually, all you're using it for is its drives, effectively. It just worked to get the data off the drives quickly, and that works really, really well. So, Vienna Ensemble Pro, so as Dan said, we've done plenty of content on it. Have a quick nose around the site.
The Pro Tools Expert podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you've ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you will know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be. Even on a good day, it really isn't good enough for a long-form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser. No software to install. All you need to do is get your free account down there with the link in the podcast notes. It's time for Find of the Week. Sponsored by UJAM.
UJAM Instruments plugins are your studio companions. Always on call when you want to ride, play, and record tracks. Take seat in the producer's chair and tell your player what you need. This means a maximum of musical and sonic integrity and versatility, and a minimum of your precious energy required to get there. Discover our virtual instruments at ujam.com.
Right, so find of the week, chaps. Dan, after you.
Well, nothing new. More of a rediscovery. You know I've got a few guitars.
One or five.
20-something.
Good work.
I don't know exactly. But there's one very special instrument in my collection. It's my old Rosewood, my 1985 Japanese George Harrison.
Nice.
Rosewood Telecaster. I love this thing. But because it's worth a bit of money and it's very special to me, I don't really use it that much. I keep it in the back of my rack so it's out of the way of clients and kids and wife. And wife, definitely wife. I don't like her playing it. I keep it out of the way. And I just forget about it. But I had a client in today and the job was electric guitar recording. And we were putting down the beginnings of an album. So we got 10 songs down to a click, just some drum loops with a guide vocal. But the point is we wanted to get the sort of the attitude of each song down with all the guitars that we've got here. And this client as well has got a few of his guitars in my collection as well. We'll talk about that another day. That was the idea. And I thought, that's brilliant. So I've got all the guitars, out and we're going through them. We went, oh, let's get the Rosewood out. And we did one song with that and we didn't bother with any of the others. We just used it all day. It was so nice to rediscover this instrument and really, really use it and have some good fun with it. So, yeah, I've got it here next to me now.
Are you stroking it?
Play it later. No. not on the podcast.
Julian, yourself, sir.
It's going to be the Roland Cloud instruments. There was a new release, and they're now AAX versions are available, so we can use them in Pro Tools. And I mean, I'd seen them when they came out, and I've kind of had a quick go on the sort of the hardware thing, because it's this plug out system that they do where they're virtual instruments, but you can plug them out to some hardware and then take them out, and basically kind of like a field programmable synthesizer that can host these instruments. One at a time, I believe. I haven't had a go on that yet, but just using them as plugins, I'm really taken with them. Mostly because two of the instruments in that collection I've owned, and I know. Well, actually, I've had a Juno 106, which I'd like everyone who's had. Like an old analog synth like that, I sold for far too little and should have hung on to, because
everyone's got that story.
Yeah,
haven't they?
Totally. Everyone. Yes. Yeah. And the other one is an SH-101, which I've had for a very, very long time.
The ultimate Queen bass line.
But it's not really serviceable. I need a decent repair person, really, because it just, there's not a huge amount of work with it, but it's not really viable at the moment. But I know both those instruments really well, and I just thought, right, they're the only two I checked out. But the Juno 106 is absolutely spot on. It is so good. And it was, I thought, really? Am I really going to recognise that sound as opposed to any other perfectly good software synthesizer? No, absolutely. They have nailed it. It is my synth. So good. What was really good as well was that I bought my 106 for £150 in 1989. From a shop, so that really tells you something, doesn't it? And it still had the factory presets on it, but I didn't know what any of them were called. And going through, finding these sounds that I recognise and used loads in the past, but actually coming up with a title as well. So I now know what my favourite sounds on that synth were actually called, because I never knew that before. So yeah, I love it. Great. And of course, fantastic. It gets to play with things like System 100s and Jupiter 8s and things that I've never, ever had a go on. So there we are. James, what's yours?
I was on holiday for a couple of weeks, and I came back to the UPS man knocking at the door saying, "Where have you been? I've got boxes for you." And one of said boxes was from our friends at Audio Technica. And in there was a brand spanking new shiny pair of ATH M60X headphones. These are their new ones. I am currently adorning them. They sound absolutely stunning. Very natural, very light, as in lightweight on my head. Very comfortable. A review will follow shortly. Now, the weird thing with headphone reviews and speaker reviews is it's all very much down to our opinion. You can't really play someone something and say, "Yeah, listen to that through these headphones." It doesn't quite work. But they are lovely. I've just checked the price out on them and thought, hey, do you know what? They're not as much as I thought they were going to be. £180 for what to me sounds like a glorious pair of closed back headphones. So review to follow, but check them out at a store or a local internet retailer near you.
James, you've just given me a great idea. With the Sennheiser Ambio headset that I was playing with a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to put those on and then make a recording of playing something through a couple of different pairs of headphones. DT-100s versus my open-back Sennheisers. Recorded
binaurally. That's a brilliant idea. That's a genius idea. Well, I'm so glad I can take credit for that. And on that moment of genius by me, it's time to end.
Of it, don't you dare.
It's time to end. So it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.